the GRT Gaming Podcast, episode 609, recorded on May 5th, 2021.
Ninth edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 442nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Denzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
I was just realizing, you know, doing this for years and years and years, I wonder how many of the... See, Podbean used to just allow a certain amount of file size, and then it would be dumped. But then it switched, and it's a lot more liberal, and it's like every single one for the past few years is still there. And I'm wondering, I wonder what it would be like to go back to listen to something like from podcast 400 and something from 2017 and listen to what we were talking about. I wonder if anybody's done that, just gone back and listened to really old episodes.
I've done that on some podcasts, yeah.
Actually,
we're listening to an old Office podcast from 2019.
I uploaded to YouTube the very first, I think, or the second episode of the Video Game Roundtable from 2009, I would guess it would be. That's 12 years ago. And I remember we were talking about Bionic Commando 2.
Oh, wow.
And we were talking about the innovation of how the Bionic Commando could actually jump now. For those who don't know, Bionic Commando, the arcade game, and all those NES games, the main character couldn't jump, and it was a platformer.
Yep.
All he could do was swing on his arm.
It was very challenging and kind of weird, because like you always get, you know, because all the other games you're jumping, so in this one you're kind of struggling with that, reminding yourself you have to use the arm, you can't jump.
You have to swing around.
I got frustrated with it. I just wanted to jump.
A lot of people got frustrated with that game. That was one of the harder games.
I love that game. I beat that game.
What a badass.
That's one of my childhood accomplishments, was beating Bionic Commando.
Wait, which platform?
NES.
Oh, okay. No, I was thinking about the XBLA remake. It was still really difficult.
Rearmed was essentially a 2.5D remake of the first game.
Yeah, and Bionic Commando 2 introduced the ability to jump, which was shocking to people.
Mm-hmm. I kind of hated it, because like I was used to that by that point.
But Rearmed was really difficult. A lot of people just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. I enjoyed that, though. Like, okay, yes, it was super hard, but, like, the trick to beating Bionic Commando was, like, in those... There was, like, these little helicopters that moved between levels as you moved between levels, yeah. And by running into them and clearing the stage that they give you, you could... It was, like, a little commando stage. It was, like, a top-down shooter stage. You could get a continue that if you died, you could just, like, continue from where you left off. So the key was, like, just farming those continues until you had, like, a good 10 of them. And just, like, take whatever the game throws at you. But, yeah, like, that I remember that was, like... I beat that game when I was 4 years old, and I was like, holy shit, I'm the king of my realm.
Yeah. Bionic Commando 2 Rearmed came out in 2011.
Wow, that was a really big improvement on the original NES cartridge, and I liked it. It had a good graphic style, and yeah, you felt like you were... It still felt somehow nostalgic of, I guess, 80s games. You know, it had all those little tropes, and just... And it had good puzzles and good platforming. And it was a fun game.
It also had a lot of replayability, because you found those, like, colored radios, and you had to bring the right one to a level to use the comm room in that level. And so there was like some if you didn't bring the right radio to there, you would never find out what people were saying or like the hints they gave. And sometimes it was just fun, stupid stuff that they would just say that was just flavor text for the game.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. There's a news item which was kind of old, and we're not going to talk about it much, but I thought it was hilarious. Like a week and a half ago, an Australian politician said he was tired of Cyberpunk 2077's woke politics. It's like, there are four types of damage that can be inflicted and resisted. Physical, thermal, EMP, and chemical. Clearly promoting great woke wholesome values? I have no idea what he's talking about.
I don't know.
That is a weird take. There are a lot of reasons to not like Cyberpunk 2077. That one seems particularly dumb.
One of the responses to it was, my family and I are living in constant fear of the four damage types, especially EMP. My wife has knife blades in her forearms, and it would devastate us if she could no longer use them. Another wrote, the four damage types destroyed my family, and not even my wrist daggers or my sister's gun arms could save them. Help us return to normality, Craig. What is he talking about?
Politicians never seem to understand video games. It's bizarre.
Even if they're talking about, even for someone who doesn't understand video games, that makes no sense.
Yeah, it's like stupid. That's stupid beyond stupid. That's like, dang, I gotta go to Thanksgiving dinner with the conservative side of my family. I hope they don't rant about EMP damage and toxic damage.
I don't know.
It's just it was in connection with Dr. Seuss canceling six of the books, which are, here's the thing, folks, those books were not really major books. They were minor. It wasn't like he was canceling The Grinch or The Lorax, you know, or anything like that. No, they're minor books, and it wasn't anybody telling them to do it. It's like the family did it by themselves. You know, it's like, these are out of date. We're not gonna have them published anymore. They're out of print. They're not gone forever. Mm-hmm. It's just weird.
Like Dr. Seuss has been around for
50 years.
Decades upon decades.
Yeah.
It's not that outlandish that they like look back at their catalog at some point and then like, is this still okay? I don't know if this is still okay. Maybe we should check in with people and see if this is still okay.
They don't even have to check in with people. They just decided, you know what? We're not gonna reprint this. And that's just it. You know, it's not like they're pulling them. They're just not doing new editions of them. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll always have issues, and Lord knows, you know, Dr. Seuss was heavily on conservative values. I mean, The Lorax, he was all pro-corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sneetches, and anyways, it was just a wacky art thing that it's just hilarious to read.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny. You're going to love this, and TJ, you're probably going to think, what took them so long, even though it came out today? There's already a mod to turn Lady D into Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yes, of course.
Oh my god.
Well, here's the thing, Scott, I don't know if you know this, but one of the popular mods for Resident Evil 2 was to turn Mr. X into Thomas the Tank Engine and give him the Thomas the Tank Engine sound effects and the music.
I think I heard that, yeah. I remember seeing some sort of mod where Thomas the Tank Engine was put on some sort of monster, and it would just make these strange noises, and it was just bizarre.
Dude, and mods are becoming, with the power of ray tracing and DLSS technology, some of these mods are getting scarier than ever. Somebody made a mod that turns the monsters in the game into Barney the Dinosaur.
Yeah, here's the thing. You know, a lot of these mods are probably plug in and play. You know, they already have the assets, they just insert it, because modding is so easy on these games.
They're absolutely half-baked, but, like, you add ray tracing effects and, like, high-resolution graphics to that, Barney's felt looks like it could, like, it looks like you could touch it, and it would wake you up at 3 a.m. in the night screaming from a terrible dream. It's weird how much, like, a half-baked sort of just, like, homebrewed mod looks so damn good in this technology.
I don't know. Ask Scott there in Minecraft how an absolutely ugly, disgusting game looks much better with ray tracing. I'm kidding.
Yeah, I use texture packs as well, so I understand. I mean, it's hard for some people to look at, but I don't have that problem.
Yeah, so speaking of Lady D, we might as well get into what you've been playing, and we know what TJ's been playing, because I'm going to tell you something. There's a game that was on his calendar for the past year. It was this one.
Yep, I had the pleasure of reviewing Resident Evil Village.
It's Resident Evil 8. They're just being cheeky with a name.
They don't say Resident Evil 8. They just highlight
the letters so you can see the 8 in the ville.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's very much a combination of Resident Evil 7's point of view movement mechanics and such with Resident Evil 4's combat upgrades, treasure hunting,
and camp,
in action,
and camp and story. I'm going to tell you something. Lady D would not look out of place in Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, and to a certain degree, like when I was playing this game, as I was playing through the game, I've beaten it at this point, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will say that like there were a lot of like encounters and story beats and moments in Resident Evil Village that were like, this is a lot like something from Resident Evil 4. Like, it doesn't like go one for one on the story, but there are just things in the game throughout the game, whether it's an encounter with a certain group of monsters in a certain place, or just like the way that you have to solve a certain puzzle. This is like, that's like that one moment in Resident Evil 4. I ended up saying that a lot.
Let's rewind back to Resident Evil 7, aka Resident Evil Biohazard. Mm-hmm. People liked the story for the most part, but late in the game in the DLC, people just hated it. And I think Resident Evil Village is a response to that. And they're saying, you know what? Okay, you didn't like a lot some of the story in Resident Evil 7. Well, we're just going to go all in on the camp and just start, you know, doing what was fun in Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, and I think another bit of feedback that heavily affected Resident Evil Village was a lot of people found Resident Evil 7 to be too scary, apparently. to a point where like they considered that feedback when they were designing Resident Evil Village. And it shows. Like, this, I wouldn't even, by the time I was done with the game, I was, like, not even able to really truly refer to it as a horror game. It's absolutely just, like, a full-on action game.
It's a horror game like The Evil Within is a horror game. Not at all.
Yeah, it's an action game with horror elements. And by that, I mean, like, this game arms you to the teeth. There are so... By hour three of this game, I had a rifle, a sniper rifle, a shotgun, and a pistol with an attachment on it that made it even stronger.
I wonder if that's more of a response to Resident Evil 2 and 3, where people are just getting sick of the limited ammunition.
And then by about hour six of this, I had two pistols and the liberty of choosing if I wanted to sell one. I had a stronger shotgun, a stronger second shotgun than I had before, a grenade launcher, landmines, pipe bombs, basically the kitchen sink. And I'd found Magnum ammo, although I hadn't found the Magnum yet. It's like, and you can craft ammo in the game. So it's like, if you're out of ammo, just make more ammo. This game, like, has no qualms about giving you everything you need.
So basically, you're Leon Kennedy again.
It has no qualms about giving you everything you need to kill anything that would dare to get in your way. To a point where, like, I felt like I was the scariest thing in the village.
Like I said, you became Leon Kennedy again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, I can't even remember if I felt that powered up as Leon. But it's just, like, it's so much weaponry.
Well, I mean, Leon had his rocket launcher, and he had a shotgun, and he had a sniper rifle, and all armaments. Here's the question. What kind of inventory system is there in Resident Evil Village, then?
It's the exact same inventory system as Resident Evil 4.
Oh, okay.
Where, like, it's an attaché case where every item takes up so many squares of space.
Right.
And you can rotate them and move them around right. inside the case like a Tetris.
Are you still combining herbs?
No.
Aw.
So you have health kit, med kits, but they're basically like you find like making ammo. You find components, which includes finding, which don't take up space in your inventory, but you find like chemical fluid and green herbs, and you can combine those together to make a health kit that will take up a spot in your inventory. But yeah, so like. And much like Resident Evil 4, you can upgrade the case so you can get more units of space. Mm. You can upgrade your weapons so they do more damage, reload quicker, carry more bullets. There is a merchant, and he is very much... Like, he's not even... He's shamelessly a nod to the Resident Evil 4 merchant. To the point where he actually has a lawyer who's like, "What are you buying?" I had a friend that used to say that.
Yeah. Except this time he looks like Casper Gutman from the Maltese Falcon.
Mm-hmm. That said, like, all that aside, it's a good game. It's the best parts of Resident Evil 4 and Resident Evil 7 without any of the bullshit. You don't have to do an escort mission, which is wonderful.
I don't know. I mean, she was never that much of a problem, Resident Evil 4. At least she knew how to hide.
Like, once somebody gets their hands on her and starts running away with her while you're trying to deal with, like, 15 other...
Yeah, it's not that bad, though. I mean, all you have to do is just snipe the guy. Come on.
Yeah, it's easier said than done when someone's swinging a sickle at your face.
Oh, come on. Give Ashley a break. Come on.
She's horrible, and I'm glad that there's nothing like that in Resident Evil Village.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Luis analog in that game as well?
Is there a what?
Luis. Luis.
Oh, let me think. No.
Okay.
No. But, like, the characters in the game are very good.
I just realized Sadler was a little person, and Lady D is a gigantic woman. I wonder if that was the... This is the big difference. This villain is tiny, and this villain is gigantic.
Mm-hmm. there's like a whole host of villains, and they're very...
I'm sorry, Salazar.
Very, like, they're very different from one another, including Lady D. So, like, this isn't much of a spoiler. There are four characters that like sort of take up leadership of the village, and you have to deal with all four of them at some point or another. And Lady D is one of them.
Oh, okay.
And every one of them are like, I would say that once you start to get in, like, they each take up like a domain, like they have, like, for lack of better terms, a level to them.
So it's like Far Cry 5 or.
Maybe more like Mega Man, I guess.
Okay.
But, and the village acts as, like, the heart of it. You basically go back to the village as, like, the connective tissue between each of these domains. But they are very interesting characters. I liked the encounters with all of them.
Does Lady D live up to the hype?
Yes.
Or Lady Dimitrescu. I'm trying to say her. Romanian
has,
name, right?
Apparently it's Lady Dimitres.
Okay. Because her name is spelled very Romanian. Dimitrescu.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard it said different ways, but in the game they actually say it Dimitres, so
yeah.
That's what I go by. But in any case, she does live up to her name. Her part isn't as big as, like, the marketing would have you believe, but she does perform, like, she performs it, her section is awesome. there are parts of this game that, like me having played every single Resident Evil game before it, I was like, I was a little caught off guard, and I liked the twists that they did. But yeah, so that Resident Evil Village, very good action game with a little bit of horror element to it. Very campy, very very action oriented, very very gunplay oriented. A pretty dang good Resident Evil game.
So, it makes me wonder about the DLC then, because a lot of people complain about the DLC for 7, and I know there's going to be a lot of trepidation about what the DLC is going to be like for 8.
I will say this, the Mercenaries extra mode that they put in this one is very good. It's basically a time attack mode. And it returned from previous games, but they did a good job of putting this one in the game. Basically, when you do the game, you'll pick a setting like the village or the castle, and then you'll have to clear enemies out of any given amount of areas in the setting. And once you clear a certain amount of enemies, you can exit the area and move on to the next area of that setting. And you get scored for it. So, like, the score is based on, did you kill every single enemy in the area? How much time did you have left? How much money did you have left? Because you can buy weapons, but you can also save your money and get a better score for keeping your money.
Yeah.
And then there's, like, these blue orbs throughout the areas that if you break them, they give you perks, such as, like, you'll have one that makes your handguns do better damage or your shotguns do better damage, or you do more damage for switching between targets on each shot, or you get health back for killing enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And it really adds, like, sort of a RNG flavor to this extra mode. I really think it's really good. I think it's a fun way for it'll be a fun way for players to challenge themselves. I really enjoyed it, and I think it kind of solves one of the problems that people had with Resident Evil 3, was just that there wasn't enough to do after you were done with the main game.
So, Scott, what have you been playing? Scott? Okay. Well,
I was on mute. I said I was playing the original, replaying the Trials from Zero game, because the Trials from Azure will be coming out this month, so I've been replaying that.
Cool. I have not yet started playing Dragon Builders 2 yet. I will.
Okay.
I have it downloaded. There's so many games I have to play now.
Yeah, you said you're going to play Octopath. And,
yeah, I have Dragon Quest Builders 2, I have Octopath. I think I might actually play Dragon Quest Builders 2 before Octopath, because it's a simpler game, and I already tried it before. Mm-hmm. It might be a lot faster for me. Heck, I haven't even started really deeply on Dragon Quest 9 yet.
Well, Dragon Quest 9, that was on the DS. You mean 11?
11, I'm sorry, yeah. Oh, I did play Dragon Quest 9, though. I did play the Spiritfarer Lily DLC, though. And, basically, it answers a lot of questions, you know? Let's just say Spiritfarer is a very metaphorical game. Lily's DLC takes the metaphor away and tells you exactly what's going on. And it's not a bad thing, because it's really tear-jerking. What it does is it adds a new character, although the character just stands there, because it is unlike the other spirits. And I don't want to spoil what it is. I'll just say that you have to travel to the three shrines and at night, and that will give you the... it'll reveal some expository scenes. And then when you go to the... I forgot what it's called, the spirit door, there'll be special lines of dialogue with her there. So, it's a free DLC, too. I really haven't played anything new. I've been dealing with MLB the Show 21, and people are really pissed off for several reasons. One, the servers keep going down, and since they decided with MLB the Show 21 to tie in single player with multiplayer, you really can't do Road to the Show because it won't advance. And the Road to the Show is broken. Only now can you actually develop a fourth and fifth pitch. It is just, I don't know what Sony was thinking. Did they not know that there was going to be a lot of people, Xbox users, who would be hitting those servers too? Did they not get the idea, you know, maybe we should get another server for this? It's like, it caught them by surprise, and it shouldn't have.
That is true. I mean, you have so many cases of underestimating demand, and then you have these server crashes, and they really need to beef up their support.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Even World of Warcraft had server issues, even though they knew they had a million pre-orders. And lately, a lot of companies have been very good about it. They'll have extra servers for like the first 3 months, and then they'll pull back depending on how much population there is. Sony was completely, I don't know what was going on with them. And a lot of problems also tie into the fact that they're doing what NBA 2K does and what Madden does with these Ultimate Team stuff and the microtransactions, and forcing single player to integrate with multiplayer. And I've seen where this leads. Single player will be more and more neglected, and it'll be all about loot boxes, excuse me, stubs, just like Madden Ultimate Team and NBA 2K. Because my pitcher can't go beyond 80 pitches without being pulled, no matter what the situation is, even if he's not tired. And it's just annoying as hell. So, I don't know. MLB The Show stumbled out of the gate, which is a damn shame because I love everything else about it. I mean, the level of detail that goes into the game. Like, I've seen some emergent stuff that just made me laugh. Like, I've seen a ball hit second base and rebound to the second baseman, who will throw it to first for the out. If you hit a batter and you intentionally hit the batter, the commentators will note that, yeah, you did that on purpose. there's so much little stuff in it, and it's a shame that it's being hampered by the same stuff that's being hampered by NBA 2K. I know a lot of people who say they're returning MLB The Show and 21 and just getting used copies of MLB The Show 20. Obviously on the PlayStation side. But, I mean, they are saying they're fixing it, so we'll see.
That's a real shame about the show, because, like, this is kind of a testing period for this game. They didn't add a ton of new stuff to MLB.
They took out a ton of stuff from what I understand.
They didn't add a ton of stuff to MLB The Show 21. Rather, the big thing here is getting this game to work properly on across all cons, across newly.
The biggest complaint I've seen so far when it comes to pitching, by the way, is that you can't have a knuckleball pitcher.
But I'm just—it's something they need to get right. It's something they need to work out here. Unfortunately, MLB The Show 21 on one side of it has to be sort of a test bed for this, because as they move on, this has to be a part of future. They're not going to go back to just putting it on PlayStation. So they might as well figure this shit out and get it right.
Don't know about that because there's one news item we're going to be talking about in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, there is some breaking news right now, and that is apparently Tencent is negotiating with the U.S. authorities to keep Riot and Epic stakes. And the reason for this is that you have to understand, they have to make sure that there aren't any shenanigans going on with the games. You know? I mean, it's very easy for them to put a backdoor into Riot game into their games, you know? Can you imagine League of Legends and there's a spy chat on it?
Yeah, it's there have been concerns over Riot Games stuff already because the anti-cheat on Valorant uses a kernel system that accesses your console, and they're
worse. I mean, Tencent is having to prove that the U.S. personal data, like your credit cards, are not at risk.
Well, that kernel thing is concerning because it's such an invasive anti-cheat system that it accesses the console of your computer and it remains there even if you delete the game. And so there are concerns that somebody could backdoor access like your system if you use this. And then there's the fact that Valorant recently this is very, very recent. Valorant recently instituted a policy that if you are reported for hate speech or toxic communication, if you're reported by enough people, Valorant will now start recording your voice for review. And yeah, that's like, and their argument is that it's in their privacy policy. They can legally do that because you agreed to it. It's super like, it's super unnerving stuff, which is why I kind of shied away from playing Riot games for the time being. A, I don't agree with the way the companies handle themselves internally and externally.
Yeah, I mean, it's not enough that they're invading your privacy, but they have a lot of sexual harassment shit that's going on there too.
They have a lot of dirty laundry.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be part of it. And also, I don't like the idea of being spied on by a Chinese company.
Man, it's a shame because Riot Games gave the best parties at E3. You weren't there. You should have been at them.
I know. I wish I could have.
Yeah. There's also some other news. Some happier news. That's not part of the main news track. But this is just basic random stuff. Titanfall 2 has exploded in popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice, because Titanfall 2 came out in, 2015? No, later. Titanfall was in 2015. That was the launch of the Xbox. Titanfall 2, I think, was launched in, let's see, what year was it? 2016. And Respawn decided, you know what, we're going to release it alongside Call of Duty and Battlefield. What could possibly go wrong? And now people are discovering it. And it's like, people are going, holy shit, this game's good. And it is.
Mm-hmm. That was a funny thing about it's cool to see that. It's cool to see Titanfall get that recognition because many will remember. We talked about this when it launched. They chose the worst possible window of launch for that game, directly between a Call of Duty game and a Battlefield game. They sat like literally in the week between the launch of Battlefield 1 and Call of Duty. I think it was World War II.
Probably.
It was either World War II or Black Ops 4. Either way, you couldn't.
It wasn't Black Ops, though. I'm pretty sure of that.
If you're not, like, the best game out there.
Okay, it was like, Battlefield 1 and Infinite Warfare.
It's just a dumb idea. Like, it's the. They got buried. The game got buried. Because, like, it's Titanfall, and that's cool, and we know it, and many people know it's cool now, but they didn't know back then.
I will say this, though. Titanfall 2 is worth it just for the single-player campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Which, oh, by the way, Battlefield 1 and Call of Duty Infinite Warfare only have a passing thing for single-player. Or at least, I know Infinite Warfare is single-player, but no one cares because it sucked.
Yeah. But it's just, it was a bad idea for them to put it in that launch window. If Titanfall 2 had launched in like a quieter period, like somewhere like around April or something, that it never would have fallen into obscurity the way it did.
And you know the funny thing is now people are saying, "Fuck Apex Legends, we want Titanfall 3."
Yeah.
How is Apex Legends doing anyway? I haven't heard really much news about it.
They just put out the latest season, which has a 3v3 arena mode, which is similar to like Counter-Strike and Valorant, where you fight around, you try to defeat your enemies. Once you kill them all, you start another round, but you can buy weapons and gear between rounds. And I haven't had a chance to try it, but one of our guys played it in preview before the season launched, and he said it was very good. I'm really interested to give it a go. I'm burnt out on the Battle Royale aspect of Apex Legends because it just takes too long to play a Battle Royale game.
Hmm.
And you got to have a lot of luck on your side to win. I am very interested in a mode that takes some of the luck out of it.
You say it takes too long, because I thought Battle Royale was designed to be pretty quick with a shrinking border and everything.
No, you see, here's the thing. Battle Royale is basically just a massive, massive, massive deathmatch. And the reason for the shrinking arena is that it makes logical sense. Otherwise, you just have two players sniping each other instead of being forced to engage.
Yeah. You know?
But it's not a short game.
Yeah, I mean, like a typical battle royale round, and it's very quick if you die quickly.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you make it all the way to the end in a game like Apex Legends, it can take anywhere from like 20 minutes to an hour to get that done, and that's if you And 20 minutes is like if everyone's hauling ass, like directly engaging each other as quickly as possible, which is almost never the case.
And I think that's the a big reason why a lot of people went from Dota to League of Legends, because I think Dota games could go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And League of Legends was very snappy.
But yeah, so like when you look at it that way, it's if you're one of the people that makes it to the end, you've been playing for a while and then you lose, it's just deflating to spend that much time to not get anything out of it. So, I don't know. I like the idea of the arena mode because it sounds snappier. It sounds like I could lose or win and just feel okay with about it because I'm just going to jump into the next game.
Yeah.
So, I'm interested in that.
So, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's nice that Titanfall 2 is getting the love now. So, we're going to move on to game news. Electronic Arts buys Super Mega Baseball Studio Metalhead Software, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. EA announced today that it's acquired the developer Metalhead Software, which produces the Super Mega Baseball games. EA Sports GM Cam Weber told Polygon that the acquisition was part of a quote-unquote deliberate growth strategy for EA Sports that includes reestablishing a presence in baseball and looking at our options here. That doesn't mean EA is looking to turn Super Mega Baseball into an officially licensed MLB game, however. My belief, he said, is that Super Mega Baseball is well differentiated from MLB The Show, and I think it has its own spot in the marketplace. Although he allowed that Super Mega Baseball could, quote-unquote, possibly be used as the basis for a separate, officially licensed baseball game. And I'm going to tell you right now, when he says that they're not looking to make Super Mega Baseball into a licensed MLB game, I don't believe that for a single fucking second. Not even a microsecond. They are getting ready for something, and they want to have an engine ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the entire reason why you have MLB The Show on the Xbox is that MLB is tired of not having you know, not making the money. I mean, here's a little bit. Here's a little secret for people. MLB The Show doesn't make Sony a profit, and it doesn't make MLB a profit. It's there as an obelisk, you know, showing, hey, look, we have this exclusive license. We have this exclusive game. We have MLB The Show. We have the only game in town. Which, by the way, doesn't have to be, but both Microsoft and Nintendo have said, nah, we're not interested in making a baseball game. Because the MLB license, for those who don't know, it says that first-party games can be made, just no third-party games. And what's particularly frustrating is that Microsoft bought the High Heat license and did nothing with it. And while I'm ambivalent about Super Mega Baseball 3, I thought there was a lot of problems with it. Number one, it wasn't too different from Super Mega Baseball 2, and it had some new problems. It's still a really good baseball game. The only drawback for people is that it doesn't have the MLB license. But its systems, it plays a really good version of baseball.
Yeah, I always admired Super Mega Baseball for, like, you know, they obviously weren't going to compete with the MLB The Show, so they kind of took it in an opposite direction, and they went for, like, a more arcadey, comedic,
But that's the funny thing. Here's the thing. It looks arcadey, but it's actually a deep simulation.
But it's also got a more comical approach to it.
Yeah, I mean, when someone gets hit in the head, they just go down like a bowling pin. One of the funniest things is to hit a bullet back at the pitcher and it just knocks him out cold.
MLB The Show is pure realism, whereas like Super Mega Baseball is slapstick. It could still be a fine tuned system in there, but it's definitely got like a more comedic flavor to it that I admire that.
But the thing is that, you know, it still has realistic baseball in terms of results and actions, and it has a lot of its own little emerging gameplay. You can take Super Mega Baseball and immediately make it look realistic, you know, just by slide. And the thing is that if you ever look at some of the cover art for the first game, it had realistic players as the cover art, which tells me they were actually going for an MLB The Show type presentation. But they said, you know, we're not going to be able to compete, so let's make it look cartoony, make it look like the Nintendo DS baseball games. You remember those? And those are actually pretty good deep baseball sims, too, from a different angle. It was more of an RPG, but still. So it'll be interesting to see where Metalhead goes with EA money.
Yeah. I was very surprised to see this today, because, like, EA has been out of the baseball... EA has only ever had, like, the slightest presence in baseball
games. That's because of the contract with MLB. I mean, they had... A lot of people still really love Triple Play and MVP baseball.
And, it was surprising to see them suddenly grab up... Super Mega Baseball of all things, and suddenly make the claim that they're getting back into the baseball game, and I'm curious to see where this goes. I'm happy for Metalhead, because for as much effort as they put into what was considered to be an indie baseball game, they got the bag. They scored the bag today.
Yeah. Well, let's not forget 2K, what 2K is doing with football, and it just seems to me, with Sega talking about making a football game that's a quote-unquote non-simulation game, and EA talking about wanting to make their own non-licensed baseball game, it seems to me that the major sports are starting to realize, you know, multi-platform is actually better. We need more people making games, not one.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I'm really interested to see what they do with the Super Mega Baseball license, and I hope it. I hope it doesn't like languish, and I hope they don't mess it up.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Back for Blood details its deck building card system. From Eurogamer. Borrowing one of Left 4 Dead's most innovative features, an AI-driven game director, Back for Blood works behind the scenes to monitor players' health, actions, and choices, and responds by, as Turtle Rock puts it, choreographing the world around them. However, judging by the game's new trailer, Back for Blood's director is able to pull from a much wider set of variables and is considerably more transparent about what these are going to be at the start of each playthrough. Before a level kicks off, you see, players are shown the game director hand of corruption cards, each of which influences how the preceding action will unfold. Some cards, for instance, might introduce environmental modifiers, disabling electricity to plunge all interiors into darkness, while others might dictate the enemies players encounter, game-impacting events, such as an endless onslaught of zombie hordes, or even optional challenges to complete along the way. On the latter front, the trailer shows a challenge known as Hasty Exit, tasking players with reaching the end of a stage within the allotted time. Where things get even more interesting, however, is in the way that players are able to assemble and deploy their own deck in response to the game director's hand, either choosing a pre-made deck to jump into the action as quickly as possible, or taking time to decide which of their own cards capable of imbuing a variety of buffs and bonuses will be brought into play. These cards can boost individual stats such as stamina and health, loot cards, cards that improve the player's offensive capabilities, perhaps transforming a bash attack into a more powerful knife slash, even skill modifiers such as talents, which might give secondary weapons unlimited ammo or replenish health whenever an enemy is killed by fire. Back for Blood is due on PC, Xbox, and PlayStation on October 12th.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's not that strange a concept, because other games have done this, in which, you know, you have the Halo skulls, you know, in which you say, okay, so I want to have half my health and make these enemies spawn and that sort of stuff. And it's a, you know, I feel like, and it probably was, that if there was a Left 4 Dead 3, this would have been the new invention they would have included in that. You know. And I'm glad to see a release date for it, too. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I like this better than what I initially, or than my initial reaction to what I saw in this whole thing. I thought that players wouldn't be able to control their cards, but it seems like you do have control over your own hand,
yeah.
Which does seem cooler and more interesting.
I mean, you can pick an archetype. You know, okay, I want to have, you know, basically be a tank, or just mix it up.
I suppose one of my last questions.
They're going to be loot cards. I mean, you're probably going to have to win loot cards.
Oh no, I wanted to, like, one of my last questions that I would want them to answer before I, like, am interested in this is, are these cards like one use where you have to earn them, and then once you use them in a game you lose them, or do you just, like, keep a collection of cards that you can use as you please?
I'm willing to bet you it's both. I mean, I'm willing to bet you you're going to have, you know, your stock cards, you know, cards that are basic, or you can earn other basic cards. And then there might be some, you know, one-time use powerful cards that you can use for a single thing, like this makes your sniper rifle three times as powerful.
Yeah. That's, I'm also curious as to how you earn the card. Well, they kind of mentioned it, but I'm also, like, curious as to the specifics of how you earn cards and build out your deck. I do like that there are archetypes that, like, build towards a style of play, like melee or medic.
Yeah, they really went into it. You can be someone who's really in love with fire. You know, killing enemies with fire heals you. You get a flamethrower and you get a couple of Molotov cocktails.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the randomized enemies is an interesting touch too. Like, like it says in there, we always just used to be at the director's mercy and Left 4 Dead. You just kind of took what it threw at you as it threw it. You never knew what was going to happen. This, like, sets up a expectation. Like, what if you see a certain monster card on there that's like, oh, God, that one's the worst to deal with. Then you have that fear lingering over your head of where is this asshole going to show up.
Yeah, and it's not like the director's not going to make more decisions. I mean, he's still going to do the same old decisions. Like, if you're doing too well, here comes a zombie horde. But, oh, by the way, everybody runs at 3/4 speed.
Like,
dun, dun, dun.
I think there's value in the tension of somebody being like, I'm going to punch you in the face, but I'm not going to tell you when I'm going to punch you in the face. You're just going to have to wait for it. That's,
yeah, I've heard that line before somewhere.
They did something like that. They did a bit like that on Family Guy, I think.
Hmm.
But in any case, it's like, there is value in that. It creates a tension, like, you know it's coming at some point, and it just, like, you have to be ready for when it is.
I wonder if they're gonna have a stupid witches crying.
They almost have witches. To have something like that. Yeah. It kind of looks like they brought back a few of the archetypes.
Well, they brought the tank, they brought the spitter, you can see the tank, the spitter, the thing that hops on your head, and the jockey.
Mm-hmm. They have the stretchy armed guy. I've seen a stretchy armed zombie in a bunch of the gameplay. But yeah, so like this is interesting that the AI director also gets unique cards to play. That also sets up the possibility of like weekly or monthly or daily challenges where you might see something set up where, like, the director has these particular cards this week. Are you going to take on the challenge?
Yeah, I think it's specifically so that they could do that, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good vector for that sort of gameplay.
So, I'm more positive on this than I've been previously, having seen exactly how it's supposed to work now.
I mean, here's the thing. Vermintide up the stakes now. And it's up to Turtle Rock to show Fat Shark, you know, what it could do. You know, how to really innovate. Because Vermintide was just basically Left 4 Dead with rats. Basically. You know. I like better having gameplay changes. And, you know, Vermintide did innovate in a bit in which it incorporated melee a lot more into its mechanics. But it wasn't a true evolution of the concept of the four-player co-op against a horde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem like Turtle Rock is putting... I mean, this is the first game that Turtle Rock has, like, put their name on in years.
Yeah, since Evolve.
And so I do appreciate that they are taking their time and putting some serious thought into making their comeback work.
Here's the thing. You know, Evolve was good in concept, but they really didn't nail it. I mean, games like Friday the 13th and Dead by Daylight managed to nail the single monster, a bunch of weak characters, and they have to figure out how to survive. You know?
Yeah. And balancing a
asynchronous.
Balancing an asynchronous multiplayer game is like the hardest thing to do because you have to have like the one character be enough to overcome the other four, but you also have to give the other four a chance. They have to have a chance, even if they can't operate like well on their own. Coming together, there has to be a reason for them to want to play on that side. Evolve didn't do that balance well. They didn't do it well at all.
Yeah, I mean, you'd say, I want to be the monster, you end up as the trapper.
And the Wraith in that, one of the monsters in Evolve was just so stupid OP that there was no reason to play as anything else. It's, they've had balancing issues in games like Dead by Daylight, but nothing quite like what Evolve had. And by the time like, and the fact is that they didn't fix it quick enough.
Yeah.
Everybody like found out that the Wraith was horrible and just too overpowered. And by the time that they didn't take the time to take that feedback and implement fixes that would make it more balanced. And so players fell off.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do hope that at some point they go back to Evolve and see how they can improve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just see if they could somehow, you know, I think one way is just to make the hunters more interesting and more powerful, you know, and be able to counter what the beast does.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they've moved on from it at this point, and I don't necessarily blame them. I like what Back 4 Blood is doing, and I think a lot of people were ready for like I think people were ready to see, like, even if it's not Dead by Daylight in name, not Dead by Daylight, Left 4 Dead in name. I think a lot of people are happy to see like Turtle Rock, the people that made Left 4 Dead, making another Left 4 Dead style game.
For those of you who don't know, by the way, Turtle Rock was just a bunch of guys who were doing a mod, and Valve saw the mod and say, "Hey, that's pretty cool. We'll give you money. You can make it a full game."
Yeah. Which is the same way that Dota came into being as well.
Yeah. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Hold on a second. Okay. Pokemon card scalpers are ruining cereal too. This is from Nintendo Life. Earlier this year, we saw a man forging ice cream sticks and scalpers and collectors and notably not children buying up McDonald's Happy Meals, both in attempts to get free Pokemon cards. Eventually, the Pokemon company was forced to address the issue of these limited edition cards being repeatedly taken by scalpers, saying that they would take measures to make sure that everyone would be able to get these cards. Well, it happened again. After announcing back in March that certain cereal boxes would contain 3 Pokemon cards out of a set of 14 in total, it seemed like people have been opening cereal boxes in the supermarket to get the cards. Some people have been buying up boxes of cereal by the pallet, like Trevor Joe, a real estate investor and wholesaler who calls it an investment, or the tweet above, which shows one wealthy family's huge stash of already opened boxes for sale. This is the toilet.
Who's gonna eat a cereal that's already been opened?
Yeah, that's just obnoxious. I'm not sure, but that should be illegal.
Well, we'll continue on.
I would most certainly.
Anyway, yeah. The rarest card from the set, Galleon Ponyta. Is already showing up on eBay alongside many duds, and some enterprising scalpers are selling sealed sets far way more than their initial cereal investment. It's worth noting that already opened cereal boxes are almost certainly going to get thrown out by the supermarket since they can't sell goods that have been tampered with. Exactly. I hate scalpers, and I hate hackers. They ruin everything. You know, this is why we can't have nice things. You know,
if I were there, I would force that family to eat every single one of those boxes of cereal for every meal of the day while they still had those boxes. Just eat them all. You bought it. You're gonna eat it. Isn't it worth for a Pokemon card?
I don't know. It's whatever. I don't know. I guess I don't get Pokemon. I don't understand it.
Oh, you know, Magic the Gathering and Yu-Gi-Oh! And every single collectible card. Pokemon still is really highly rated as a collectible card game system, you know?
It is. I know. I've seen they have these YouTubers now that do openings. They open a pack and show you the cards they got, which just feels like flexing or whatever.
Oh, please. I mean, you have girls who eat on camera
for
a profession.
There's a lot of weird videos out there. I don't know.
It's
I mean, it's like, I like stuff that's a tutorial maybe, or, you know, showing you how to do something and listening to them go on about their day is just like, why are we listening to this?
Unboxing videos are a thing. Come on.
Getting off topic, I guess. It really sucks when people do this, when someone who has a large amount of cash just goes and buys all the stuff and ruins the fun for some kid out there who, you know, might get lucky, you know, and get a fun little thing. And then, no, all the golden tickets have been bought. You know,
I would just do what they did with Tide Pods, you know, just lock them behind a case. If you want one, you get one. And that's it. Just one.
Yeah. That's really sad that it has to come down to that, but, yeah.
I mean, supposing, well, here's the thing. What the people are doing at the supermarket is outright illegal, though. You just can't go and open a box of cereal just to grab the prize inside and leave the box there on the shelf.
Yeah, that's tampering. And
that does cut into a supermarket's profits, because they can't sell that cereal.
Right.
Hopefully they get caught, and they take their picture and say they're banned from here for life.
Yeah, that's just, well, you know, that's the worst part, is just that a company tries to do something fun, you know, for people, and greedy people come in and ruin it.
TJ?
Yeah, that's absolutely ridiculously absurd. Like, if I was still working in retail and I turned a corner and saw somebody opening cereal and digging through to try to find the prize.
Do you guys remember when Bethesda released those limited edition Nuka-Cola bottles and they got bought up?
Yeah, I still have one of those.
Nuka-Cola Quantum? I don't even think it made
Nuka
it.
Quantum, yeah. I mean, well, here's the thing. At least those are sold out naturally. People wanted it. You know, it wasn't because they were going to get a code for anything. No. It's just a cool-looking blue bottle, you know, bottle with blue liquid in it.
Yeah.
You know, I still have one of those bottles somewhere here that just, you know, I fill it with soda, and it looks cool.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have been able to get one, but yeah.
Oh, no, here's the thing. They actually do sell that stuff still. You just have to find it. I'm pretty sure you can get it if you want it right now from maybe the Bethesda store, because it's not that difficult to do, you know.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's just a bottle and put whatever
you
want.
Yeah, and you put a label of, you put the Fallout label on it, and boom.
Mm. Yeah.
I think they do it whenever Jolt decides they're going to do that special. It's like the McRib sandwich. You just have to be there when they start doing it again.
Mm. Yeah.
I have those little. And this is before the Bethesda that we went to, TJ. I have the little figurines that they gave out at one of Bethesda's conference, E3 press briefings. And it was one with Dishonored and Fallout. One of the Fallouts, probably Fallout 4. And I think Bioshock Infinite. I still have it in the package because I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I don't think it's worth anything. Watch, I could look on eBay, it's like worth $5,000, something ridiculous like that. I still have the mug that TJ got me, that I requested, that I asked them to get for me. It's a very nice it's a very nice pen holder.
Nice. Yeah, I've got mine as well. It's actually on top of my desk here.
Cool. And you drink out of it?
No.
No.
It's just it's a cool little shelf thing.
Yeah. But getting back to this, you know, they just have to figure out a better way to have these kind of contests. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with our industry news and gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at ChardRemore.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
And we all await Resident Evil 8, except for TJ, because he already played it.
Yep.